Chapter 157. It was 6 days before I could go back into Father's room to look in the shirt box in the cupboard. On the first day, which was a Wednesday, Joseph Fleming took his trousers off and went to the toilet all over the floor in the changing room and started to eat it, but Mr. Davis stopped him. Joseph eats everything. He once ate one of the little blocks of blue disinfectant which hang inside the toilets, and he once ate a 50-pound note from his mother's wallet, and he eats string and rubber bands and tissues and writing paper and paints and plastic forks. Also, he bangs his chin and screams a lot. Tyrone said that there was a horse and a pig in the poo, so I said he was being stupid, but Siobhan said he wasn't. They were small plastic animals from the library that the staff used to make people tell stories, and Joseph had eaten them. So I said I wasn't going to go into the toilets because there was poo on the floor, and it made me uncomfortable to think about it, even though Mr. Ennison had come in and cleaned it up. And I wet my trousers, and I had to put on some spare ones from the spare clothes locker in Mrs. Gascoigne's room. So Siobhan said I could use the staff room toilets for 2 days, but only 2 days, and then I'd have to use the children's toilets again. And we made this a deal. On the second, third and fourth days, which were Thursday, Friday and Saturday, nothing interesting happened. On the fifth day, which was a Sunday, it rained very hard. I like it when it rains hard. It sounds like white noise everywhere, which is like silence, but not empty. I went upstairs and sat in my room and watched the water falling in the street. It was falling so hard that it looked like white sparks, and this is a simile too, not a metaphor. And there was no one around because everyone was staying indoors. And it made me think how all the water in the world was connected. And this water had evaporated from the ocean somewhere, in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico or Baffin Bay, and now it was falling in front of the house, and it would drain away into the gutters and flow to a sewage station where it would be cleaned, and then it would go into a river and go back into the ocean again. And in the evening on Monday, Father got a phone call from a lady whose cellar had flooded, and he had to go out and fix it in an emergency. If there's only one emergency, Rodri goes and fixes it, because his wife and children went to live in Somerset, which means he doesn't have anything to do in the evenings apart from playing snooker and drinking and watching the television, and he needs to do overtime to earn money to send to his wife to help her look after the children. And Father has me to look after. But this evening there were two emergencies, so Father told me to behave and to ring him on his mobile phone if there was a problem, and then he went out in the van. So I went into his bedroom and opened up the cupboard and lifted the toolbox off the top of the shirt box and opened the shirt box. I counted the letters. There were 43 of them. They were all addressed to me in the same handwriting. I took one out and opened it. Inside was this letter. 3rd May, 451C Chapter Road, London, NW25NG, 0208-887-8907. Dear Christopher, we have a new fridge and cooker at last. Roger and I drove to the tip at the weekend to throw the old ones away. It's where people throw everything away. There are huge bins for 3 different colours of bottles and cardboard and engine oil and garden waste and household waste and larger items. That's where we put the old fridge and cooker. Then we went to a second-hand shop and bought a new cooker and a new fridge. Now the house feels a little bit more like home. I was looking through some old photos last night, which made me sad. Then I found a photo of you playing with the train set we bought for you a couple of Christmases ago. And that made me happy because it was one of the really good times we had together. Do you remember how you played with it all day, and you refused to go to bed at night because you were still playing with it? And do you remember how we told you about train timetables? And you made a train timetable, and you had a clock, and you made the trains run on time. And there was a little wooden station, too, and we showed you how the people who wanted to go on the train went to the station and bought a ticket and then got on the train. And then we got out a map, and we showed you the little lines which were the train lines connecting all the stations. And you played with it for weeks and weeks and weeks. And we bought you more trains, and you knew where they were all going. I liked remembering that a lot. Oh, I have to go now. It's 3:30 in the afternoon. I know you always like to know exactly what time it is. And I have to go to the co-op and buy some ham to make Roger's tea with. I'll put this letter in the postbox on the way to the shop. Love, your mum. Then I opened another envelope. This was the letter that was inside. Flat 1, 312 Lausanne Road, London, N8 5BV, 0208 756 4321. Dear Christopher, I said that I wanted to explain to you why I went away when I had the time to do it properly. Now I have lots of time. So I'm sitting on the sofa here with this letter and the radio on, and I'm going to try and explain. I was not a very good mother, Christopher. Maybe if things had been different, maybe if you'd been different, I might have been better at it. But that's just the way things turned out. I'm not like your father. Your father's a much more patient person. He just gets on with things, and if things upset him, he doesn't let it show. But that's not the way I am, and there's nothing I can do to change that. Do you remember once when we were shopping in town together? And we went into Bentall's, and it was really crowded, and we had to get a Christmas present for Grandma. And you were frightened because of all the people in the shop. It was the middle of Christmas shopping when everyone was in town. And I was talking to Mr. Land, who works on the kitchen floor and went to school with me. And you crouched down on the floor and put your hands over your ears, and you were in the way of everyone. So I got cross, because I don't like shopping at Christmas either, and I told you to behave, and I tried to pick you up and move you. But you shouted, and you knocked those mixers off the shelf, and there was a big crash, and everyone turned round to see what was going on. And Mr. Land was really nice about it, but there were boxes and bits of broken bowl on the floor, and everyone was staring. And I saw that you'd wet yourself, and I was so cross, and I wanted to take you out of the shop, but you wouldn't let me touch you, and you just lay on the floor and screamed and banged your hands and feet on the floor, and the manager came and asked what the problem was, and I was at the end of my tether, and I had to pay for 2 broken mixers, and we just had to wait until you stopped screaming. And then I had to walk you all the way home, which took hours because I knew you wouldn't go on the bus again. And I remember that night I just cried and cried and cried, and your father was really nice about it at first, and he made you supper and he put you to bed, and he said these things happen and it would be okay. But I said I couldn't take it any more. And eventually he got really cross and he told me I was being stupid and said I should pull myself together, and I hit him, which was wrong, but I was so upset. We had a lot of arguments like that, because I often thought I couldn't take it any more. And your father's really patient, but I'm not. I get cross, even though I don't mean to. And by the end, we stopped talking to each other very much, because we knew it would always end up in an argument, and it would go nowhere. And I felt really lonely. And that was when I started spending lots of time with Roger. I mean, obviously, we'd always spent lots of time with Roger and Eileen, I started seeing Roger on his own because I could talk to him. He was the only person I could really talk to. And when I was with him, I didn't feel lonely anymore. And I know you might not understand any of this, but I wanted to try to explain so that you knew. And even if you don't understand now, you can keep this letter and read it later, and maybe you might understand then. And Roger told me that he and Eileen weren't in love with one another anymore, and that they hadn't been in love with one another for a long time, which meant that he was feeling lonely too, so we had a lot in common. And then we realised that we were in love with one another. And he suggested that I should leave your father and that we should move into a house together. But I said that I couldn't leave you, and he was sad about that, but he understood that you were really important to me. And then you and me had that argument. Do you remember? It was about your supper one evening. I'd cooked you something, and you wouldn't eat it. And you hadn't eaten for days and days, and you were looking so thin. And you started to shout, and I got cross and threw the food across the room, which I know I shouldn't have done. And you grabbed the chopping board, and you threw it, and it hit my foot and broke my toes. Then, of course, we had to go to the hospital, and I had that plaster put on my foot. And afterwards, at home, your father and I had a huge argument. He blamed me for getting cross with you, and he said I should just give you what you wanted, even if it was just a plate of lettuce or a strawberry milkshake. And I said I was just trying to get you to eat something healthy. And he said you couldn't help it. And I said, well, I couldn't help it either, and I just lost my rag. And he said that if he could keep his temper, then I should bloody well keep my temper. And it went on and on like this. And I couldn't walk properly for a month. Do you remember? And your father had to look after you. And I remember looking at the two of you and seeing you together and thinking how you were really different with him, much calmer. And you didn't shout at one another. And it made me so sad, because it was like you really didn't need me at all. And somehow, that was even worse than you and me arguing all the time, because it was like I was invisible. And I think that was when I realised you and your father were probably better off if I wasn't living in the house. Then he'd only have one person to look after instead of two. Then Roger said that he had asked the bank for a transfer. That means he asked them if he could have a job in London, and he was leaving. He asked me if I wanted to come with him. I thought about it for a long time, Christopher. Honestly, I did. And it broke my heart. But eventually I decided it would be better for all of us if I went. So I said yes. I meant to say goodbye. I was going to come back and pick up some clothes when you were back from school. And that was when I was going to explain what I was doing and say that I would come back and see you as often as I could and you could come down to London sometimes to stay with us. But when I rang your father, he said I couldn't come back. He was really angry. He said I couldn't talk to you. I didn't know what to do. He said that I was being selfish and that I was never to set foot inside the house again, so I haven't. But I have written you these letters instead. I wonder if you can understand any of this. I know it'll be very difficult for you, but I hope you can understand a little. Christopher, I never meant to hurt you. I thought that what I was doing was the best for all of us. I hope it is. And I want you to know that this is not your fault. I used to have dreams that everything would get better. Do you remember you used to say that you wanted to be an astronaut? Well, I used to have dreams that you were an astronaut, and you were on the television, and I thought, that's my son. I wonder what it is that you want to be now. Has it changed? Are you still doing maths? I hope you are. Please, Christopher, write to me sometime, or ring me on the telephone. The number's at the top of the letter. Love and kisses. Your mother. Then I opened a third envelope. This was the letter that was inside. 18th September, Flat 1, 312 Lausanne Road, London, N8, 0208 756 4321. Dear Christopher, well, I said I'd write you every week, and I have. In fact, this is the second letter this week, so I'm doing even better than I said. I have a job. I'm working in Camden at Perkin and Rashid, which is a chartered surveyor's. That means they go around looking at houses and work out how much they should cost and what work needs to be done on them and how much that work will cost. And also, they work out how much new houses and offices and factories will cost to build. It's a nice office. The other secretary is Angie. Her desk is covered in little teddy bears and furry toys and pictures of her children, so I've put a picture of you in a frame on my desk. She's really nice, and we always go out for lunch together. I don't know how long I'll stay here, though. I have to do a lot of adding up of numbers for when we send bills out to clients, and I'm not very good at doing this. You'd be better at it than I am. The company is run by two men called Mr. Perkin and Mr. Rashid. Mr. Rashid is from Pakistan and very stern and always wants us to work faster. And Mr. Perkin is weird. Angie calls him Pervy Perkin. When he comes and stands next to me to ask a question, he always puts his hand on my shoulder and squats down so his face is really near mine and I can smell his toothpaste, which gives me the creeps. And the pay is not very good either, so I shall be looking for something better as soon as I get the chance. I went up to Alexandra Palace the other day. It's a big park just round the corner from our flat, and the park is a huge hill with a big conference centre on the top, and it made me think of you, because if you came here, we could go there and fly kites or watch the planes coming into Heathrow Airport, and I know you'd like that. I have to go now, Christopher. I'm writing this in my lunch hour. Angie's off sick with the flu, so we can't have lunch together. Please write to me sometime and tell me about how you are and what you're doing at school. I hope you got the present I sent you. Have you solved it yet? Roger and I saw it in a shop in Camden Market, and I know you've always liked puzzles. Roger tried to get the two pieces apart before we wrapped it up, but he couldn't do it. He said that if you managed to do it, you were a genius. Loads and loads of love. Your mother. And this was the fourth letter. 23rd August, Flat 1, 312 Lausanne Road, London, N8. Dear Christopher, I'm sorry I didn't write last week. I had to go to the dentist and have two of my molars out. You might not remember when we had to take you to the dentist. You wouldn't let anyone put their hand inside your mouth, so we had to put you to sleep so that the dentist could take one of your teeth out. Well, they didn't put me to sleep. They just gave me what is called a local anaesthetic, which means that you can't feel anything in your mouth, which is just as well because they had to saw through the bone to get the tooth out. And it didn't hurt at all. In fact, I was laughing because the dentist had to tug and pull and strain so much, and it seemed really funny to me. But when I got home, the pain started to come back, and I had to lie on the sofa for 2 days and take lots of painkillers. Then I stopped reading the letter, because I felt sick. Mother had not had a heart attack. Mother had not died. Mother had been alive all the time, and Father had lied about this. I tried really hard to think if there was any other explanation, but I couldn't think of one. And then I couldn't think of anything at all, because my brain wasn't working properly. I felt giddy. It was like the room was swinging from side to side, as if it was at the top of a really tall building and the building was swinging backwards and forwards in a strong wind. This is a simile too. But I knew that the room couldn't be swinging backwards and forwards, so it must have been something which was happening inside my head. I rolled onto the bed and curled up in a ball. My stomach hurt. I don't know what happened then, because there's a gap in my memory, like a bit of the tape had been erased. But I know that a lot of time must have passed, because later on, when I opened my eyes again, I could see that it was dark outside the window. And I'd been sick, because there was sick all over the bed and on my hands and arms and face. But before this, I heard Father coming into the house and calling out my name, which is another reason why I know a lot of time had passed. And it was strange, because he was calling, "Christopher? Christopher?" And I could see my name written out as he was saying it. Often I can see what someone is saying written out, like it's being printed on a computer screen, especially if they're in another room. But this wasn't on a computer screen. I could see it written really large, like it was on a big advert on the side of a bus. And it was in my mother's handwriting, with little circles over the letter I. And then I heard Father come up the stairs and walk into the room. He said, "Christopher, what the hell are you doing?" And I could tell that he was in the room, but his voice sounded tiny and far away, like people's voices sometimes do when I'm groaning and I don't want them to be near me. and he said, "What the fuck are you..." "That's my cupboard, Christopher. Those are..." Oh, shit. Shit, 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 shit. Then he said nothing for a while. Then he put his hand on my shoulder and moved me onto my side and he said, "Oh, Christ." But it didn't hurt when he touched me, like it normally does. I could see him touching me, like I was watching a film of what was happening in the room, but I could hardly feel his hand at all. It was just like the wind blowing against me. And then he was silent again for a while. Then he said, "I'm sorry, Christopher. I'm so, so sorry." And then I noticed again that I had been sick because I could feel something wet all over me and I could smell it like when someone's sick at school. Then he said, "You read the letters." Then I could hear that he was crying because his breath sounded all bubbly and wet like it does when someone has a cold and they have lots of snot in their nose. Then he said, "I did it for your good, Christopher. Honestly, I did. I never meant to lie. I just thought it was better if you didn't know that I didn't mean to. I was going to show them to you when you were older." Then he was silent again. Then he said, "It was an accident." Then he was silent again. Then he said, "I didn't know what to say. I was in such a mess. She left a note and then she rang and I said she was in hospital because I didn't know how to explain. It was so complicated, so difficult. And I said she was in hospital. And I know it wasn't true, but once I'd said that, I couldn't change it. Do you understand, Christopher? Christopher? It got out of control, and I wish..." Then he was silent for a really long time. Then he touched me on the shoulder again and said, "Christopher, we have to get you cleaned up, okay?" He shook my shoulder a little bit, but I didn't move. And he said, "Christopher, I'm going to go to the bathroom, and I'm going to run you a hot bath. Then I'm going to come back and take you to the bathroom, okay? Then I can put the sheets into the washing machine." Then I heard him get up and go to the bathroom and turn the taps on. I listened to the water running into the bath. He didn't come back for a while. Then he came back and touched my shoulder again and said, "Let's do this really gently, Christopher. Let's sit you up and get your clothes off and get you into the bath, okay? I'm going to have to touch you, but it's going to be all right." Then he lifted me up and made me sit on the side of the bed. He took my jumper and my shirt off and put them on the bed. Then he made me stand up and walk through to the bathroom. And I didn't scream. And I didn't fight. And I didn't hit him.